AskTheChief.com/in-depth.
Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Ask the CIO with your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Rocio Alvarez, the Lawrence Berkeley National Lab Chief Information Officer. Rocio, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
I'm happy to be here.
Well, let's start with some basics. The mission of the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, you, I'd say, are my first CIO at a national lab for the Energy Department. So just give us a sense of what your mission is. What does the lab do every day?
Well, every day it's a very simple mission. What we're trying to do is basically solve the most profound scientific problems facing humankind. That's what we try to do every day. We're an unclassified fundamental research institution. We do research across all the sciences, biosciences, photon sciences, computing sciences. We're currently one of our main areas of strategic importance is resolving or trying to reestablish a balanced carbon cycle. It's lost its balance. We're calling it carbon cycle 2.0 to try and reestablish a cycle such that it creates a better world for us. And so we're looking at it. We're looking at the way just to understand how energy is used, reducing the amount of energy that's being used, energy production, something called carbon sequestration, and we're also doing a lot of climate modeling.
Does that put you under a ton of pressure to solve the most profound scientific problems that face humankind every day?
We feel a little bit of pressure, but it's also really exciting. I mean, you're working in a place where you feel what you do, even if it is removed as being, you know, back-end, you know, patching systems, you're part of what's helping either, you know, make the world a better place to live in the future.
And I'm sure you're a hit at parties saying that, you know, hey, you know, be nice to me. I'm solving your problems. I mean, I'm sure that works out well for you. Tell me a little bit about how Lawrence Berkeley National Lab fits in with the other Energy Department research labs. I mean, because they're located across the country, Idaho, Tennessee, and several other places.
Right. There's 17 of them. DOE labs exist in this very unique contractual relationship with the government. I think the government many, many years ago realized that it wasn't suited to carry out scientific research. It wasn't nimble enough, didn't have the right kind of intellectual talent. So what it did is it contracts with entities that do this. For instance, in my case, it's contracted with the University of California. UC is my employer, and UC carries out the energy research on behalf of the government. So each one of the labs is unique. It ranges from predominantly classified, highly sensitive work, like those in the what's called the NNSA, National Nuclear Security Agency labs, to those that work entirely in open science environment and doing fundamental research such as Lawrence Berkeley does. So they vary in size and what they focus on. We work very closely with a number of the labs across the complex, but we also collaborate extensively with other universities. I mean, we are part of the University of California, so we do collaborate with other UCs, but other universities across the country and even internationally.
So if you are kind of a contractor operated, government owned lab. And is that still where Lawrence Berkeley falls?
Right. It's what they call the GOCO model, the government operated contractor owned model. The easier way is the MNO, management and operations, is the type of contractual relationship.
Do you then have to follow all the government's regulations and rules, for instance, around acquisition, around technology? So do you have the, for instance, Federal Information Security Management Act that you have to follow?
That's a very loaded and complicated question because we are not a federal agency. We are a UC agency, for instance. We are, whereas other labs are run by Battelle or by a private consortium. It varies, and these entities are not federal entities. Federal entity is DOE headquarters. They are the sitting over there in Washington, D.C. So those kinds of statutes and congressional mandates face DOE headquarters, not necessarily the national labs. And then it's up to DOE to interpret how those are applied, how those requirements are applied to the national labs. And the idea was to, the whole idea of this contractual relationship was to free up these labs from the sort of very bureaucratic environment in which the government functions in so that they can be nimble and be able to produce research results and experiments and so on, that they wouldn't be layered with all these requirements. So it's a very careful and sometimes not very well orchestrated dance that we do. But in the end, I think it works out rather well that we're not facing those requirements directly.
Very interesting. I guess it just was one of those things that occurred to me as we're talking here, because, you know, you have it's a government funded to a certain extent, and but you're not government employees. And as you said, you fall under the Department of Energy. So it's a very interesting setup. Now, you're the CIO of the Lawrence Berkeley National Lab. Give me a sense of how you support their mission, because as you said, and I'm going to go back to this, solving problems that face humankind. Again, your job must be pretty intense. So give me a sense of what you do every day as CIO.
Well, in general, my main job is to provide an information infrastructure that enables scientific work. And what does that mean? You know, the researchers know their domains best and have, you know, quite a bit of leeway in how they accomplish their goals. So my job is to provide the infrastructure that to some degree stitches those things together to provide the shared services for them that they rely on. For example, we run very high-speed networks optimized for scientific data flows at, you know, 10 gigs. We run high-performance computing for scientific research visualization. We run tools that enable scientific collaborations. So those are the kinds of things we do to directly support the scientific mission. But, you know, I'm also responsible for the more traditional IT services, like managing in our ERP system that lets scientists get paid and lets them, you know, buy new test tubes. So, you know, it's sort of the gamut. I manage the things that are very close to them, but also the things that are back end and help them carry on their daily work.
Do you fall into the operations of the day-to-day type of CIO, or are you also a strategic side CIO, or how does that work?
I do both. I'm part of the operations area here, but we're also, again, very, very engaged with the researchers and understanding their science and really trying to be at the forefront of what they're doing with computing. I mean, many people have said, you know, that computing has become the third pillar of science, right behind experiment and theory, and can't carry out scientific research any longer without computation. And so we're very engaged with them in their science.
And that actually is a great segue, because that leads me to my next question about when you work with other scientists, and it must be difficult because they're all very smart people. They all have pretty strong opinions, and they all kind of, as you said, they know what they're doing. They know what they need. How do you, as CIO, balance their needs versus your needs as CIO around security, around, for instance, just standardization across a network, around, is that enough bandwidth? Is it enough storage? Do you find that balance hard? Or is it, as you said, it's a matter of just getting involved, getting engaged with the researchers?
It's true. It's having, you know, we do have brilliant people here. And sometimes it's a challenge and an opportunity, and also a very difficult challenge sometimes. Sometimes researchers that we're working with are quite a bit ahead of where we are in understanding a particular new tool that's out. So they're very receptive to us proposing new tools, because the fundamental way in which they carry out the research is to experiment. Let's try a new tool. Let's see how it helps us analyze our data, how it helps us do whatever it is we're working on. And so they're very receptive to new technologies and changes in technology. But at the same time, they have very high expectations of my staff. They, you know, the tolerance level for people who aren't at understanding a new technology at the level that they are is not very high. So it's a real challenge to my staff to really stay on the edge of whatever's coming out, the newest tool, the newest technique, the newest software program. We really have to be with them there or ahead of them. So I'm also very fortunate that I have very extremely talented staff. I mean, I sit next door. We're adjacent to the UC Berkeley campus, and it gives me a pool of some of the most talented people, I think, in the country.
And speaking of staff, just give me a sense of how many employees you have that work in the IT area, and what was your IT budget, if you can tell me a little bit about for this year?
I have about close to 200 staff, and my budget is about $40 million a year. And that staff and budget supports roughly 3,800 researchers and staff that are here on site, and then about another maybe close to 4,000 visitors and collaborators we have. We have major facilities here that are visited by researchers from all over the country.
All right, well, let's take a quick break, and we can come back and talk some of your priorities. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Rocio Alvarez, the Lawrence Berkeley National Lab Chief Information Officer.
CIOs and IT directors, is your network-attached storage infrastructure out of control? Do you have dozens and dozens of NAS appliances that are difficult to administer? Ask the experts at Vion Corporation how Hitachi's high-performance NAS, powered by BlueArc, can consolidate your NAS infrastructure, reduce your number of NAS appliances, and improve your NAS performance. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com. CIOs and IT directors, are you paying for capacity services that you're not using? Take a good look at your capacity services contract, and next time, make sure you're not signing just another lease. Ask the experts. Vion Corporation, you can create a plan so that you only pay for what you use. When your job is on the line with data storage decisions, that's the way to go. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with integrity and quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Rocio Alvarez, the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory Chief Information Officer. Now, Rocio, before break, we talked a little bit about how you guys are set up, how you as CIO supports the Lawrence Berkeley National Lab's main mission. Give me a sense of your priorities. What are you looking at? What are you working on over the next 6 or 9 months?
The next 6 to 9 months, we're looking at, I guess the big one is to modernize our key ERP or business systems. The state of the art in ERP systems has really begun to shift, and we're looking at opportunities to take stock of the landscape at this point. You know, cloud or what, you know, software as a service applications that we know are showing some real promise in the area of ERPs, which is new. So we're keeping our eye on that and following that very closely to, you know, maybe influence or change our upgrade or modernization path for our ERP system. We've recently deployed software as a service for our talent acquisition and management, basically for recruiting. And that just went live literally 3 days ago. But we're also looking to improve things in the area of collaboration services, cybersecurity, high-performance computing coupled with sustainable data center technologies. So I'd say those are all the sort of key areas that I'm focusing on over the next year.
All right, well, let's talk about a couple of those. The ERP, I know that's one of those areas that so many federal agencies, so many, you know, private sector businesses have struggled with, they've not had a lot of success with. What are you using now, and do you foresee it changing into a whole new system, or is it, as you said, just maybe migrating bit by bit, piece by piece to the cloud or software as a service?
We're currently a PeopleSoft shop. We have been for the last decade plus. And we're at the point now of we're at a decision point. We either move to the path of migrating or migrating to the next version or doing something else. And so we, at this point, are opening up all possibilities. We're, as I said, we've been exploring the solution space available out there right now, and there is at least one vendor that's providing a SaaS solution for ERP, but there's also other vendors who are maybe not quite there but are offering interesting ways to provide a better ERP system. We will be releasing a request for proposals within the next couple of weeks, I'd say, that's going to invite these vendors to submit proposals to us so that we can more rigorously evaluate their offerings.
All right, very nice. Don't blame me if you start getting a lot of calls now from vendors interested in trying to tell you how great they are.
They're already calling.
All right, well, excellent. So that won't be my fault. But it's interesting that you guys are looking at the potential for cloud, because I think that's a big area. And you just mentioned another software as a service you all just implemented for talent acquisition, management, recruiting. Give me a sense of about what that is, how that works.
It's actually a reasonably straightforward program. It's done on the front end. It interacts with our potential interested recruits. We have a job posting. It gets posted on our website. You're interested, you come to our website, enter, you know, you can do a search. If you're looking for, let's say you're a systems analyst and you're looking for systems analyst positions, you can go by department, you can go by job category, gives you information on what's available, gives you a temporary login, you log in, you submit your resume, your names of references, so on and so forth. Doesn't sound incredibly groundbreaking or novel, the nice piece of it is that this is all, as I said, it's all in the cloud. Our vendor hosts, it's on their premises, and they're hosting the hardware and software. And what we have done is basically done configuration for this. It was a little bit of a challenge. The vendor wasn't quite ready, not quite where we wanted the vendor to be with their software at the point that we were ready to deploy, which we were ready to deploy quite a few months ago. But we were able to work with them, and I think it's, you know, as I said, it's only a few days old, so I don't know how successful it will be. But the staff here, especially in the HR system, are really excited about it.
Now, did it replace an older system or a system that was, you know, kind of a mainframe back-end?
Yeah, it was a patched together system that we had that would talks to our current PeopleSoft system. So it was this homegrown plus a third party vendor software that we had that we were running here internally.
So it's got to be easier right then and there, just in terms of keeping it going and keeping it up to date and stuff like that. Let me also move over to the other issue you brought up around your priorities. You talked about looking to improve collaboration services, cybersecurity, high performance computing, even sustainable computing. Do you have some ideas around those areas in terms of whether it's moving to the cloud or just how to improve those areas?
I'll talk a little bit about HPC and sustainable computing. I think they're very, very much linked. We've seen our HPC demand at a constant, I'd say, growth rate of about maybe close to 20% a year. And so it puts a real demand on our data center. You know, we're bringing in new machinery in there every year. And we've been looking at ways in which we can use cloud offerings to provide those cycles to our researchers rather than us bringing in more hardware to provide those cycles. So we've worked with vendors that provide those services. There's Amazon, Penguin, and maybe one or two others smaller that provide those sort of HPC cycles. And we've been working with them to look at their reliability, scalability, cost, and comparing to what we currently offer, and maybe going down the path of offloading some of the growth that we're seeing into the cloud. So we're working in that direction. We've also done quite a bit to just make our data center extremely green. We're looking at liquid cooling for our racks. We've done things in the area of lots of monitoring. So we monitor environmental very closely. And the beauty of that is that now, you know, you're used to walking into data centers and it was, you know, you were prepared. You took a little sweater or jacket with you because it was going to be, you know, 60 degrees in there. You walk into our data center and it's 90-ish degrees because we run it very much on the edge because we have these monitors and sensors that if, you know, in the event that there's any kind of fluctuation in temperature or anything, we're able to respond immediately and remedy the situation. So those are some of the things that we're doing, I think, that are really working towards supporting our HPC growth, but doing it in a sustainable manner.
That's incredible, a 20% increase in the demand for high-performance computing each year. In the past, you said you've dealt with it through bringing in new hardware. Now you're looking at potentially going to the cloud. And I imagine there's some cost savings as well that you're looking at because hardware is probably the most expensive thing. I mean, data centers and racks and cooling, maybe that long-term cost. But the short-term cost is that new machinery every year.
Mm-hmm. It is, and it's still as expensive as it is to do it, you know, on premises. It's still slightly less expensive than going to the cloud at this point. And I say at this point, I see costs coming down from the cloud service providers. So I don't know how long it will continue to be cheaper for us to offer it, but what we've done is we've prepared ourselves and keeping our eye on what is happening in the cloud and cloud offerings to ensure that we're, you know, when the price is right, we can move there quickly.
I'm a little surprised to hear you say that it's less expensive to do it yourself than to go to the cloud, because one of the big things around cloud computing is that idea is it's always cheaper to go to the cloud because of the volume issue. Is that really the difference, is that there's not quite that volume for high-performance computing needs yet?
It might be. It might be that it's such a new offering that there isn't sort of a mass market yet.
And as you said, as things change, as things get cheaper, you're hopeful to make it a quick transition. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about another transition you made recently. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Rocio Alvarez, the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory Chief Information Officer.
CIOs and IT directors, are you paying for capacity services that you're not using? Take a good look at your capacity services contract, and next time, make sure you're not signing just another lease. Ask the experts. Vion Corporation, you can create a plan so that you only pay for what you use. When your job is on the line with data storage decisions, that's the way to go. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with integrity and quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com. CIOs and IT directors, is your network-attached storage infrastructure out of control? Do you have dozens and dozens of NAS appliances that are difficult to administer? Ask the experts at Vion Corporation how Hitachi's high-performance NAS, powered by BlueArc, can consolidate your NAS infrastructure, reduce your number of NAS appliances, and improve your NAS performance. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Rocio Alvarez, the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory Chief Information Officer. Now, Rocio, before break, we talked a lot about your priorities. We talked about high-performance computing, a possible switch in your ERP. One of the things that you also talked about is a lot about cloud computing, and Berkeley National Lab was one of the first across the government, across the big organization, to move to Google Apps for email and collaboration in the cloud. About 5,000 users, I think you guys moved recently. Discuss that decision, the benefits so far, the challenges you're facing, because I think there's a lot of people around government really looking at, okay, do I want to move my email, my collaboration to the cloud?
I know that for some organizations, the move to the cloud has been driven by a need to get away from broken or very old technology. But that wasn't the case for us. Our email system was running pretty smoothly and at a pretty low cost at that point. But what I was interested in was much more around enhanced functionality and collaboration tools and mobile support. So we started looking at vendors and various alternatives that were out there at the time. We went through a pretty rigorous analysis of the various alternatives. Did security evaluations, testing. We had discussions with our stakeholders. And at the end of that, we decided to go with Google Apps, and we converted, as you said, 5,000 email accounts over the time frame of about maybe 6 to 8 months. And then we also converted our calendar over to Google Calendar. It all went actually for critical applications such as mail and calendar for our lab. It all went very smoothly. In terms of benefits, we expect to see cost savings in the area of about $1.5 million to $2 million over 4 years. Again, the real reason we made the move was for functionality, so the additional savings was just sort of icing on the cake for us. The one challenge that we faced with it, I mean, there's, you know, smaller challenges, but I think the larger challenge has been a cultural shift for my staff in supporting this new environment. We're part of Google's Early Testers program, and so we get preview as to what's coming down the pike in terms of new functionality that will be rolled out. But even so, it's a little difficult for people who support at the help desk. They're used to a long and drawn-out process for any kind of enhancement to any kind of system that you have. And with Google, and I think with most cloud providers, the new functionality is rolling out weekly. And so it's really makes some people feel a little nervous and a little unstable. And I think that was probably the most difficult challenge with my staff here internally.
It's interesting that you said the savings are really kind of icing on the cake, but you really were looking for more functionality. Give me a sense of what functionality you were specifically looking for. I know you said collaborative tools, mobile support, but is there anything more specifically you can talk to?
Really, mobile support. The ability to just look at your calendar on your PDA. We were in Oracle's environment prior to that. We had Oracle Calendar, and it was, it took some real sophisticated programming to figure out how to get an app to run on your PDA so that you can access your calendar. I mean, something as simple as that, we weren't able to do, and with Google Apps, it's almost trivial.
As I mentioned, several agencies are looking at this. Would you offer any kind of advice to other CIOs who are going down this path? What's one or two things that when you look back in hindsight that you said, wow, that worked really well, or wow, if I would do this over, I would do it a little differently?
One thing that would be important for a CIO if I was looking at this and knowing what I know now would be to really engage with whatever the vendor is at a pretty high level so that, you know, they're maybe a VP or at that level, is really aware of your roadmap with this. And conversely, you are aware of their roadmap in terms of support, new functionality. So there's no surprises. I think that's where one thing we didn't do very well. And I know with Google in particular, they're trying to really get that structure in place, and so that they're it's much easier for CIOs to be able to interact with individuals at Google that know what the roadmap is, or at least have a reasonably good idea of where they're headed.
Very good advice. I think CIOs, that's one thing that sometimes is overlooked, is that lack of high-level collaboration, discussion. There's so much data that's being produced. How are you managing that? How are you making it sure that it's available and accessible and secure?
There's no question. Sizes of data sets are growing far faster than our ability to really effectively process and manage them. I guess the data question is the next big challenge for scientists in just about every domain. So we have to continue to move and grow at the pace that sort of data flows are coming at us. So it really creates a challenge. And we also have to be very aware of the kind of compute that's happening at the higher levels of the stack, if you want to call it that, to ensure that we have the kind of hardware that is compatible with the kind of compute and algorithms that are being developed by the scientists.
Unfortunately, we're almost out of time. But before I let you go, I always like to ask a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your background. So give me a sense, how long have you been the CIO at the Lawrence Berkeley National Lab? And where else have you worked? You some maybe like maybe you had a little bit of a past as a scientist in there.
Well, I've been here at the lab 4 years now, but I guess I just reached my 10-year anniversary as a CIO. Before that, I was not a scientist. I was a professor. I was a faculty member in the business schools, although I did have my undergrad in engineering, but I went into management in a business school, and so I was a professor at the University of Washington and the University of Massachusetts after I finished my PhD. Then I was asked, while I was a professor, I was asked to manage the IT division temporarily, I was told, at the University of Massachusetts, and here I am 10 years later, still in managing IT divisions for yet another research organization. So I never really went back to being a professor after that, you know, quote, temporary leave, but have very much thoroughly enjoyed. I mean, the reason I didn't go back is because I thoroughly enjoyed being in sort of in the thick of managing IT.
And again, you're solving profound problems of humankind, right?
Right. There we go. The very modest path.
There you go. All right. Well, as I said, we are out of time now. So you've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today was Rocio Alvarez, the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory Chief Information Officer. Rocio, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jason. I really enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM WFED, your source for federal news now.
How can government executives drive performance in a cutback climate? What are the latest best practices for tackling today's human capital challenges? Join OPM Director John Berry and hundreds of federal managers to learn how to achieve more with less at Excellence in Government, July 11th. Register today for early bird rates, www.excelgov.com. www.excelgov.com. Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
John Blum is the Deputy Administrator and Director of the Center for Medicare.
To reduce waste, fraud, and abuse is to correct the payment policies that encourage fraudsters to provide services. So, for example, we have historically paid for hospital beds and wheelchairs way inflated rates, and that has encouraged a lot of bad actors to come into the program, a lot of fraud. So it's the process of paying at market prevailing rates to ensure that we create the correct incentives.
Hear the entire interview online.